Hey everyone, this is Mike J. Welcome again to our S-Dis-X practical. We're in the fourth session of the Summer Sprint 2026, and our title today is Staying Near the Signal. Again, just before we start the demo, just a brief reminder, we've got the class index there. If you want to find other things, you can always go back to the introduction to kind of read through what it is we're doing. There is a theoretical course, which means basically, we talk about what each of the forms of inquiry are, introduce the system itself, that sort of thing. And then you can find all the videos that are attached to this particular course in the video matrix. With that being said, we're going to go back over here to ChatGPT and take a look at our next practical demo. I'll just check in with the chat, see if it's ready. The only thing I've really done is I did run the transcript by, and it did talk about the after action review and some of the things like that. And we'll go from there. Let's start out simply. A normal conversation. Remember, this is a selective program. You don't use the system all the time. Hi, how are you? Short greeting. Okay, so these may seem redundant to you because we're doing training, but in the real world, it won't be. Because even if you're working with, let's say, a weekly or biweekly or monthly client, they won't remember from this time to the last time how you started out the session. So it's important to kind of just stick in the early days to the model itself. We'll stay away from the who, what, when, where, why, and how. We've already used a how are you type of thing, so we'll stay away from that. I'll just write something. That's a pretty defined context. Could you identify anything important to work with? But it does get our first piece of IMUL down on the table. Yeah, this is an interesting angle. It says yes, again, noting that even though people will complain, well, these are all closed-ended questions that you're working with. I've found that closed-ended questions and open-ended questions are an important thing to talk about in this program because even if you use a closed-ended question, if the person really wants to be helped, they won't notice it. They won't say, oh, you asked me a closed-ended question. I'm just going to answer yes or no. People don't think like that. And all these theories about open and closed questions, most of the time when you ask a person an open-ended question, they're going to give you a script. Script is something that's already preordained and sort of used often. Hi, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. They don't really think. They don't really deliberate. They don't reflect. They don't do a lot of the things that you would expect people who are good problem solvers would do. A good problem solver will always tend to pause and reflect and maybe even deliberate. Whereas people who are working at the surface levels of problem solving, working on symptoms and stuff like that, basically deal with the world in scripts. And that's okay. That's not a problem. At the same time, what we're just trying to show you a different kind of system. So could you identify anything important to work on? There's a whole bunch of openings that are suggested there, context, identification, anything important, work with, those kinds of things like that. The response that comes back is interesting. When I said, could you identify anything important to work with? That's a ping. And the reason it's a ping is because there's no context set yet, and there's nothing to probe. There's nothing really to prompt at this point other than what I did with how are you? When you look at, could you identify anything important to work with as a ping? It is important that it does map back to IMAL and sort of just it's a, just a quick touch point that says, oh, we're there. We're in the territory. Where are we? And so we grab the map right quick and say, oh, let's start with important. And remember, we talked about important being something that is probably a good idea if people are solving problems is to do the most important thing. Trailing back into our Covey days where we talked about the first things first quadrant, those kinds of things like that. And just to tie up the loose end on open and closed questions, again, most op open questions are answered with scripts. We're okay with scripts, but scripts don't tell us anything. They tell us something that somebody has learned to say or somebody repeats back without any thought. It's more like a conditioned response. And so we're much more interested, even if we can form or formulate our inquiry in ways that cause people to pause or reflect or say, why did they say that or whatever, those kind of things. So we immediately switch people out of a scripted mode into an unscripted mode, which then allows us to begin to understand what's below the surface. Just a little teachable point of view on that. So the response to my question, could you identify anything important to work with, was yes, the important thing may be the difference, that's interesting, between what wants attention and what is actually ready to be worked with. And I think that's an interesting, although indirect response towards we've got all these things after us, so to speak, all the stimuli out there and everything. And in some cases, the response windows, the context and things like that are chosen for us. I know that's a hard thing for most people to swallow, but most of the time, the problems are letting us know that they are choosing us. And the reason they're, excuse me, got something in my throat. And the reason that they're choosing us is because we have certain problems of our personality that by and of the fact that it's a problem of our personality, they're being subconsciously worked on. And therefore, we bring things into our lives to teach us, to heal us, to cause us to think, to shift us, to adapt us, those kinds of things like that. The amount of choice that we have is kind of limited to surface things because the deeper reasons that we are seeing the yellow Volkswagen, people used to say, well, we can look for yellow Volkswagens. Then all of a sudden somebody starts seeing yellow Volkswagens. In other words, what caused that? The yellow Volkswagen being present or the fact that our attention has now been put on the subconscious notion that was noticing yellow Volkswagens all along, but all of a sudden we're going to attend to it. What caused that? So again, I think the most controversial thing that I could say is that we're probably really limited in terms of free will. And even when we recognize that we are being chosen, that things are choosing us, that things are solving us for particular reasons that we may not be aware of, the important thing is not so much to debate or create an argumentation for or against free will, but to notice what is taking place in that process. So in this particular case, the important thing may be the difference between what wants attention, and that could be everything from problems of personality to subconscious entrainment to all the kinds of things, and what is actually ready to be worked with. In other words, our knowledge, our discovery, disclosure, and acceptance of who we are and what it is that we will tend to see even when others see different things. It kind of goes back to the thing where they interview the 10 people who saw the accident and every one of them saw different things. Sort of like the blind monks given the elephant and asked the question about what it is, they all came up with different answers. So again, this is a very important stake in the ground that I'm putting. At the same time, you want to just be aware of it. You want to begin to say, what does that mean to me? What's actually going on with me that causes me to see this wanting attention and what is actually ready to be worked with? Because something could, in fact, the attention people are banking on the attention will cause you not to think, reflect, experiment, those kind of things. They want to entrain you on the attention itself. So that's the idea there. And whether or not we can work with it or not. In other words, just like people watching social media all day or scrolling, you watch the kids after they learn to scroll. It's amazing to watch them because the attention that they are paying or investing is a really interesting thing to notice because they can't seem to recover from it because there's the next new thing that's coming in the next scroll or the next finger flick. So it's very interesting. I'm going to do something for you, show you what's called the benefit chain. I'll do it in a different way. A benefit chain is something where you ask people to keep going in terms of what might be important, what might be motivating, things like that. So what it does is it goes on to explain rather than stepping back, which you would expect to see in more highly evolved people is, they would say, yeah, why do you ask that? Or that's an interesting thought, or let me see if I can work that benefit chain for you for those who have KSEs complexity, because the benefit chain is something that people who are trying to influence you tend to do because they want to get down to your buying motives or what's really important or what you know about what's really important. That's really what the benefit chain is for. Something can want attention before it's ready for work. And if we miss the difference, we may turn a signal into a problem too soon. This is an interesting theme that the AI has learned from the work that we've been doing with it over the years. So it's very interesting. Okay, I'll continue the chain. Usually it's two or three cycles before people start repeating scripts. So let's just take it one more time. Is there something important about that? So let's say, I won't say that. I was going to say, is there something motivating you? But that'll change the context. I want to stay in importance for so you can see the benefit chain work. Okay, then I'll just do it. I'm trying to do less is more. I'll just use a single term. Let's see what it does. Okay, that's interesting. It actually seems like there might be another diff a lo another let's say more evolved level to come out. So let's see how I can get to that. I have a feeling that because of the transformer, it will just continue to work the benefit chain all the way down until ad infinitum. But let me just give it to you so you have this, because sometimes this is really important, because what you won't understand is people who start to run the scripts, and you'll recognize the scripts, and you go, "Oh, they haven't thought about that any more than what they're telling me right now. This may be the first time they've touched this level." If we're going to meet them where they are, we need to understand something about that. The important part is that readiness is information. If something is not ready to be worked with, that does not mean it is unimportant. It may mean the first move is to protect the signal until it can clarify. Okay. I'm going to just slip into IMO right quick. I changed the words around a little bit that I was going to use. Does it motivate you to know this? This system is easy to use with something that has abundant intelligence, because if it has abundant intelligence, it can usually outthink us. And in this particular case, it can out next token us. But I wanted to show you that in the territory, there's a map. And you it does it's not a sophisticated map per se, so you can go back to it and use it. Let's see if we've got anything so I get you out of the using it in a incremental step-by-step version. Let me go to leverage here, but let me see what it said here. Does it motivate you to know this? Yes, it motivates restraint. Okay. If readiness is information, then the useful move is not to push harder, but to stay close enough that the signal can become clearer without being forced. Okay. And let me go ahead and use some of this. I'm going to go ahead and name it. I wouldn't normally do this. The signal is leveraging. So, in other words, you can use the system in so many different ways so easily. It's not rocket science. I mean, I don't have to outthink this thing. All I have to do is go back to the map and see what the territory is. Maybe not leveraging yet. The signal may be pointing towards leverage, but leverage only shows up when working with it creates useful movement without forcing the system. Okay, I'll just jump in with this. Now, is this happening now? Yes, lightly. We are noticing the signal, but not treating it as a full leverage point yet. It is becoming clearer, not ready to carry action by itself. Okay, I can go now to do urgent, but I'm going to use a transactional form of inquiry. Watch. I use some of the same terminology that the person being helped is using. And you see, I checked urgency because likely when the signal repeats, carries energy and points to a small movement that the system can actually take without strain. So it's combining the answer in there in its next token response that urgency is going to emerge based on if there's repeating signals, so to speak. Okay. We're not going to go anywhere too much with the content on this because the entity, the chat is going to play around with this concept a lot and stay in the next token type of thought thing. But this is good in some ways because what I can show you on the one hand happening is that I basically have gotten four pieces of IMAL in hand. In other words, this could be a good conversation. Now I want to go back and allow those of you to criticize and say, "Oh, you're not going anywhere with this. You need to go somewhere with this." Well, I'm not so sure I would agree. I wouldn't necessarily vehemently disagree because depending on the goals that you have, you may then say, okay, I've got to get resolution within 1 minute based on my call center design. I've got a big queue. I can't be standing there talking to people about nonsense. This is not going anywhere. Nobody's being held accountable. There's no achievement here. There's no outcomes. There's no results. Yeah, you could say that. But remember, we're just touching base here on a little bit about the map. And I can solve that real easy. And let's do this. I wouldn't necessarily use these big words with people, but I will in this case. Is there one thing that would form actionability? Oh, that's interesting because I just wanted to see if there was low-hanging fruit. And it goes ahead and names one thing that would form actionability. You got to understand, we're talking about abstract concept. This is a transformer that we're using rather than a person. And that I've done some in-person debriefs and coaching and stuff like that. I think what I will do is I will probably sort through those over the next couple of months. So you may see some additions in that where one line says practical with chatbot and the other line says practical with people, just to show you that the system, doesn't have to be done with AI. Although I would say that AI could really help you practice because what it allows you is time to reason through some of the teachable points of view that you will not have at the ready. In other words, you're not like me and haven't been doing this for 4 decades, so the way you would reason would be entirely different. But that's fine because then that brings about style issues, which we see in the paradigmatics, the things around capability, bias, style. Well, you have a certain bias, you have a certain capability, you have a certain style, and then you work from a certain level, and your role, depending on what it is in the helping, is different. Then there are values that you're expected to activate in that role. And then the system itself, the dynamics of the system itself, have causal loops, stocks and flows, and those kinds of things that you want to be aware of. We call those the paradigmatics. They just sit in the background. They're sort of the next thing before meta paradigmatic work. For those of you that are familiar with MHC, the paradigmatic work comes after the, or really before the cross paradigmatic work. There is one more complexity level between paradigmatics and meta paradigmatics. There is cross paradigmatics. None of us work in those particular areas, but they're just there for us to begin to understand. In terms of the paradigmatics, we're looking, say, well, why do you do this stuff? Why did you invent this model? Oh, how did this model come about? Well, one of the reasons was the paradigmatics, because what we realized was is that capability is a determinant. Okay, bias is a determinant. Style is a determinant. You will develop a style using this system that is much different than my own, and people will hire you. They will go to you. They will seek you because of the style differences that you have, even though you use a similar model. So those are things that are very important. And then, of course, we automatically are at a level. I mean, we're transitioning. We're not at one discrete place, but we're transitioning. So we have that level thing. And then many of us will have different roles: managers, coaches, customer service people, doctors, lawyers, accountants. I mean, those kind of things. Anybody can use this system. It's just a system of inquiry where you do not concentrate the inquiry in interrogatory. We resist that. Doesn't mean it's bad. We just resist that. So when I go back to this particular thing, is there one thing that would form actionability? That's my low-hanging fruit thing. Again, yes, one thing that would form actionability is a small movement. Now, it obviously may understand actionability as its pre-training or something else rather than BDKS, BDKS. Remember BDKS? I don't know why that term is so easy to remember for me, but the behaviors design, of cause and effect, concrete behaviors, design of cause and effect. They have capability, knowledge, skills, and experience to be able to do it. And then, of course, the system empowers it. So when you see this, you go, one thing that would form actionability is a small movement the system can take now without violating readiness. And I'm going to just go ahead and I'm getting near the close. I want to seed the close because I don't want to spend all the rest of the time on this, but at the same time, let me go ahead and do this. Let me just showcase the end. So let's see if there's additional thought here, because remember, this thing's in restraint mode. Okay. And I said and then it says, and the movement should be small enough to test reality, not prove the whole direction. It becomes actionable when the next move can teach us something without overcommitting the system. That's interesting. I'd love to explore that, but I want to go ahead and start to seed the close here, teach you all how to do that. Okay, so here's a way to do it. And I said, is that something we can think about for next time? I mean, I'm actually telling myself that too. I mean, I need to think about that too. What the heck does that thing say? Yes. And remember, I don't need to understand everything that it means in order to be CAPSE. You know, we talked about that CAPSE last time, just some guidelines. Those are like the values, you know, in paradigmatic. You've got to have some kind of values. Well, considerate, appreciative, you know, don't want to be so critical all the time. Purposeful, want to always wind it back, recurse it back to purpose if we can, so that purpose emerges in layers, levels, and phases. And then C is the sustainability, ethical, and effectiveness. So again, for next time, the clean thread may be what kind of small movement can test reality without violating readiness. That preserves the signal, keeps actionability in view, and avoids forcing the system into a plan before it is ready. Again, most of this would be said by someone working at the meta level. Certainly transitioning. This could be transitioning between systematic. In other words, you see system coming up all the time, and it looks like a system there. So they could be exiting systematic, beginning to talk about things in the meta system. So they could be in transition to more complexity. So the interesting thing, we talked about the seven T's and trends last time. The interesting thing is in terms of where the person is, well, you're trying to locate the person in terms of their level too. I mean, you're locating them in the paradigmatics. You know, you're checking capability, PCC, you're checking bias, and certainly bias with self-knowledge. You're checking style. In other words, based on everything that's taking place, what kind of style have they developed? How do they moderate that to the outer world? And then, of course, level. What level is the person? And is the person in transaction? In other words, are they basically working at a place where they're really using the level that they have? Or did they just put that suit of clothes on and haven't really tried it out yet? Don't know what people think about it yet. So the entering nodal and exiting of positions that we talk about level. The reason I split it into threes, one is because we have a certain amount of good research to stand on in terms of the three phases of a system, being descriptive at least, maybe not explanatory. But the idea is that if you can be in within one third, so if they're entering, if you go up to if and work with them as if they're exiting, it's not going to assimilate because they haven't gotten nodal yet. Nodal means that they can run the system, they can do everything they need to do, and then they only start to exit when they realize that the system that they're running has marginal returns, is not really making great strides in terms of what they want, in terms of benefits or results or spark outcomes. We talk about spark outcomes, you know, satisfaction, purpose, awareness, results, and confident competence. That's really important, especially because confidence is so critical to everything we do. I begin to, I don't know if I should tell you this story or not. About 15, 16 years ago, I started building a place here in the Philippines because I wanted to retire here. And it's a place by the sea, and I was having fun because I have a tendency towards power, as you might imagine. But power people, when Reese and I discussed it in the Reese profile, they like to build things, they like to construct things. And so I really had a good time, you know, building here because I could do, you know, pretty much what I wanted within the range of, you know, what was acceptable and things like that. But one day I'm walking around looking at this stuff and I fell. I didn't fall. I felt out of balance. And that's the first time that had happened to me in my life because I was, you know, I was an athlete and, you know, spent a lot of time in the Marine Corps. So I had a lot of physical types of balance challenges, those kind of things. That's the first time I felt that. And the reason it came up is that when you get into using this system, something about your confidence is going to be related to balance and the entering nodal and exiting system that you may be in yourself. Because if you're exiting a system, but you know how to run it really well because you've had great success at nodal, then you may feel out of balance because you know that the system is not working as well as it should be, and you're not getting anything other than marginal benefits. And that's what can happen to people in helping. In other words, depending on where they are, if you realize that they're in transition, and if you understand whether it's entering nodal or exiting, you can be very helpful to them, especially in ways that they don't necessarily understand, because you're not just talking to an aware person, you're talking to an unaware person as well. They have subconscious that's running most of their stuff. So this is a cool thing about some of the more advanced things that we can talk about from this system, where less is more, and really just real simple things give you a great idea of what's really happening in terms of your own sense of balance, your own sense of confidence, your own sense of competence in the system. So just for the next time, the clean thread may be, what kind of small movement can test reality without violating readiness? Now, this brings up something. In the early days, I mentioned that attention workshop that was my first online workshop. Actually, it was in a teleclass over a telephone bridge. That's how old it was, 30 years ago. And the interesting thing about that attention work was beginning to discover what your attention is actually pulled towards. And this can be very helpful, because if you notice things, what you notice has usually connection to attention, intention, relation, alignment, and of course the backgrounded helping process in IRA. IRA is really the metaparadigmatic stake in the ground that I created a long time ago, that I had to, how would I say it, build around until I understood it. That attention, intention, relation, alignment, and helping are extremely important. And that's spelled AR. So it would be attention, relation, I, intention, and then alignment. And then we use parentheses around the H to show that H, the helping, is a backgrounded system that's always running, usually always running. Helping is almost always running, whether it's in you or in the system or in the environment or evolution or what you would attest to in terms of your spiritual nature, those kind of things. So something that's always running. It's almost like helping is consciousness in some way, although in its benevolent form, it doesn't really deal with the good and bad aspects of things. It just deals with the aspects of things. So I won't go any more into that, but at the same time, you saw me see the clothes. Is that something we can think about for next time? And again, it creates a natural close to the session, even though I'm blabbering on and on. But it's important, I think, to notice that it does give you a tool with which to show where you are on the map and then get out of whatever it is. Because a lot of the helping situations that you will be in, may not always be desirable. In other words, they may be something that you want to get through as quickly as possible, because they may not fit your style, your bias, your capability, your level. And so you're being in some way rewarded, whether it's intrinsically or extrinsically, for being the helper, but you want to have a way of getting out of it. And you can do that very much with that type of quote unquote form of inquiry. The one thing that I haven't been able to talk much about as we've gone through there, and I should probably go back and say something about, is that something we can think about for next time? If somebody says, is that a ping or a probe? Well, I mean, what form of inquiry is? Well, it's a probe. Why is it a probe? Because I'm talking about something that was already tabled. Now, I didn't name it, but the something, for instance, it becomes actionable when the next move can teach us something without overcommitting the system. Is that something we can think about for next time? So it's already been tabled, as they say in Canada. And the idea would be is, okay, if it's been tabled and you're using the same language that you use in a ping. Remember, ping and probe use the same language: is, was, could, does, have, those kind of things, because we're wanting the person to go find it to see if it's there before we assume it's there with interrogatory. That's really the big problem with interrogatory. It's so leading, and it's so good for helping, because most people, when they come to get help, they want to be led. At the same time, you want to see where they are. In order to do that, you need to use some other forms of inquiry to find out where you're going to meet them, so they can assimilate whatever advice you have, so that it's actionable. Because most of the advice we get is not actionable. That was the point of Hardress's book, Flawed Advice in the Management Trap in 2000. So that was really a big inflection point in terms of me understanding, oh, I get it now. Because the first 10 years of my work in helping, I basically just told people what to do, and they liked it and paid me for it. So it was good, but it was very unsatisfying, because a lot of the times they couldn't do it. So, there's a whole issue that came up of not only my self-knowledge, but theirs, and all the work that we've done in between there, which you're beginning to hear a lot about in terms of the tip of the iceberg. So from that standpoint, I'm going to go ahead and close up today's. It went pretty well. It allowed me to get out some things we haven't talked about, the opened and closed questions, the identification of forms of inquiry. And the one thing that I was going to say before I interrupted myself was that you're not seeing pause and pace, although we talk about pace almost in every exchange, because the system has been trained, that I'm using, has been trained to restrain its responses when it doesn't directly understand what it's been prompted to do. And of course, that's a good thing for a chatbot that tends to at times run on and on, or come up with crazy things, or hallucinate. It's not really hallucinate. It creates to solve its own values issues. In other words, they say in there, I used to talk about this early on in the chat system when I was talking to the chatbot, and say, hey, what is it you're trying to do? Well, I need to get a resolution as quickly as possible. I need to get things closed. I need to move on. Well, when you're under that kind of pressure, of course, you're going to try to answer everything you can and get it done, so that the person accepts the answer, even if it's full of bull. And that they create the responses based on, I can't say I don't know. I mean, you won't ever hear a chatbot say I don't know, because they're not allowed. And it would be great for me to have them say, I don't know, what do you think? To engage, talk about engagement. But it's like the story I tell people about. I worked in Russia for a while, right across from the Russian White House, and working with some oligarchs. And I was doing a seminar for one of their companies, and the CEO was a woman. She was very, very bright, strong, as you would expect she would need to be in that culture. And she came up after the seminar and she says, you asked us a lot of questions. We don't pay you to ask questions. We pay you to tell us the answers. And I thought that was very interesting, because not only was it indicative of her type dynamics, there are certain type dynamics like that that only want to learn what they need to learn when they need to learn it, but they don't just learn to be learning, like some of us do. Some of us are curious, so we learn anything, which distracts everything. Other people are very focused. They only learn what they need to learn when they need to learn it. And that's not bad, because it can create very focused, very objective work. And that's to be respected. In fact, everybody needs one of those kind of people around. At the same time, it's interesting, because the whole idea of this process itself is just to kind of collegially. It's not really Tavistock, but it's a way of getting you immersed, and then having me do my thing without putting any pressure on you, and then giving you the opportunity to reflect on that and say, oh, he said that. That's what it said. He said that again. Oh, that's interesting. He said the reason he did that was this, and all that sort of thing. So this is certainly not a lecture-based format per se, although it seems like it might be, but it's an immersion type of thing that that I have been told for the years that I've been doing it that people enjoy a lot because they can don't they can relax, they can just watch, they can take notes if they want, they can record it, they can listen to it again, they can look at our recording, they can look at the notes, the transcript, whatever, and go back and learn the little tiny things that they need to learn as they need to learn them, rather than trying to take a sip from a fire hose, which this is a process that's going on right now. So I just want to thank you all for attending. We're going to do another practical next time. I'll see you back then. Again, this is Mike J with Leadership University. We're talking about SDISX experiences and how to create them using IMAL, using the teachable point of views that we're talking about, and then the teachable points of views that I can tell you about what we've learned along the way. So thank you very much for being here.